Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we're joined by Jakeem Citron, who's engineering management and DevSec Ops at Attune. It's great to have you join us today. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for the invite. Really appreciate it. Really excited.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. So I mentioned your role title there, engineering management and DevSec Ops. Mm-hmm. That's one that I've not really heard before. So could you give us a bit of, you know, insight into that?
Yeah, definitely. I think folks are accustomed to hearing DevOps.
Yeah.
I think there's another kind of like, I guess, title, if you will, that's cropping up now, which is SecOps, you know, stands for security operations. And my role at Attune is a hybrid of both. It really ends up being mostly DevOps, but a lot of it is just ensuring that our cloud, and specifically our cloud, is up to snuff on security. That's not to say I work closely with our head of IT, Eric, great guy, to just make sure we're secure across the board. But my role specifically also makes sure that anything that's in AWS, which is the cloud that we rely on, related, is very secure. So I'm kind of like, you know, I'm responsible for that. And it also means that, you know, if there's any type of investigations or anything where we have to speak up about our security in our cloud, in our apps, that's kind of, that relies on me.
Right. Amazing. And yeah. Attune, you might have to just give the listeners a bit of insight into that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Attune is, aside from being a really exciting place to work at with great people, our goal, our mission is to redefine small business insurance. Specifically in America, right? We're trying to be the one-stop shop for insurance for small businesses. Look, I'm not an insurance guy, right? I'm a tech guy, but I know that that includes a number of products, from business owner's policy to, you know, general liability insurance, all types of different insurance. Again, not an insurance guy, but it is, like I said, one-stop shop for all of small business insurance needs, and we're growing. We're growing to just make sure we can be the best that we can be, and not only that, but also the best in the industry, quite frankly.
Yeah, interesting, because you mentioned you're a tech guy, but not an insurance guy. And I find that point really interesting, because I've had a lot of people in these kind of old industries like insurance and, you know, banking and things like that. And they like, nowadays, those kind of industries like to describe themselves as a tech business that does banking, or a tech business that does insurance.
Yeah. I think that's definitely what you're seeing a lot nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, bust on anyone, but everyone's trying to be like a tech company. I think that that's great. I think that leveraging technology specifically in these old industry, you know, legacy industries is great. I think Attune specifically started out as a tech insurance business. And I guess what I mean by that is the first hires were product and engineering folks, right?
Right.
First hires, obviously there was a founding team with a whole bunch of, you know, mixed bag of talent and just a lot of good talent across sales, you know, insurance, underwriting, technology, but there was a strong focus from the beginning to really just have technology be a key player in what we do. And I think that's important to highlight.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, if you think about technology these days, I'd just like to touch upon this quickly and how fast it's moving and, you know, the role that you're in. And, you know, you have to have you have to be well ahead of the curve with technology, really. And I just want to find out how you learn about technology. Where do you learn about it? You know, people say YouTube, is it certifications or podcasts or...
That's a great question. I get asked that so often, even by fellow like engineers, and I can list my sources, so to speak, but it's always something that I find very interesting, because I think learning about the industry you're in, learning about the field that you're in, is a continuous thing for honestly just any profession out there. I think specifically for technology, for like software engineering, it's much harder, because things are just so rapidly changing. And what what works for me, and look, it's not, I mean, there's still stuff that I don't know about that's coming out, right? But I just try to keep plugged in 24/7. And what I mean by plugged in is like anything, Twitter, Hacker News, Reddit, Slack communities, now that Slack is a big thing, really just Googling stuff, right? Like I'm a big Googler, like any good engineer is, right? So anytime something comes up that I don't know the word or just, I don't know what they're referring to, I just go ahead and Google it. And talks, you know, both like professional talks at conferences, but also just talking with other engineers. I spend a lot of time in one-on-ones naturally as an engineering manager, but also just honestly, because I like it, I'm a people person. And I think that just talking with folks, you get a lot of just, you know, hearsay, so to speak, and then you dig into that. I think digging into it is the important part, because that's really where you start to catch up, right? But you're right. It's an uphill battle. There's a lot of technology changing. It also really depends on the stack. Like we use TypeScript and Attune, you know, so basically JavaScript under the hood. And there's a lot of just like the tool set for JavaScript is constantly changing. Yep. There's constantly new frameworks and stuff. So you really have to, kind of stay on top of your game. Same thing for like, you know, cloud engineers, you know, DevOps engineers, AWS, there's like a new AWS keyword every month. Right. And what has helped for me specifically in that regard is basically following AWS news and the AWS newsletter. I get a lot of information from that. A lot of honestly new features. Like we have fixed and we have improved products because of things that come through that newsletter, because of things that come up in the news. So, I mean, it's not just staying on top of your game. It's also actually, you know, being a better engineer, but building a better product. I think it's key. I think sometimes we lose sight of that. That's important.
Yeah, God, totally. And I find it so interesting, you know, we're talking about how quick tech can move, but say if you were out of the tech game for a year and then you tried to get back in, do you think what you know now is basically, will it just be, you know, would that be impossible, basically?
I don't think it's impossible, but I think that there's going to be a lot of, I guess, prep time to get back in, right? I think that you know, I mean, the core of what you know, the core of your experience is definitely still there. It's definitely still valuable, but you're definitely going to have to tweak more than a thing or two, right? Because like I said, there's just like constantly just a lot of changing things that, I mean, half a year from now, there's a better way to do it. Yeah. And that's often been the case. I mean, again, I'm very into DevOps and that's pretty much been the case with like DevOps, you know, and I mean, definitely not half a year, but you know, whatever, 5-6 years ago, Docker coming up and then infrastructure as code. Even 10 years ago, it was the same. And I know that 10 years is a long time span, right? But I mean, in the grand scheme of things, not that much. And it's just getting quicker and quicker and faster. So I think that you're definitely going to be out of the loop and you're definitely going to have to spend some time to just get back in the game, so to speak.
Yeah. It's quite scary that though, isn't it? How fast it moves, technology moves. And it is almost like, it feels like it's just getting quicker. And it almost feels that tech is the only kind of industry or space where it feels like this is quite unique to technology. I can't think of any other industry where developments happen as often and as fast as they do in technology, you know?
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think that's why software engineers have not just software engineers, but anyone in the tech industry, right, has an ongoing battle to not just learn what's new, but also try to steer the ship, so to speak, a little bit. It doesn't mean that, I mean, I'm all for just like the next big thing, if it's really the next big thing. But I do think that kind of being very mindful about what you're building, what you're adopting, specifically if you're an engineering leader, what you're adopting, what technology you're adopting, but not just like technology, like hard technology, right? But like, you know, process and stuff like that, new methods. I think that you got to be mindful of what you're bringing into the fold, because I mean, it can disrupt stuff quickly. And I mean, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. I think really the mark of a good engineering leader is knowing when to bring in something to the fold. But I think the fact that we're in an industry where technology changes so rapidly and it's just so constantly changing, you have to be very, very sensitive to changing stuff, quite honestly, right? Because you also have to deliver a product. You also have to deliver value. And it's hard to, I think that's what engineering does pretty much all the time, right? It's like, you know, fixing the car as you're riding in it, but as it's moving. But I think that it's like a balance, right? And so it's very important to find that balance and strive for that balance and make it better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we can't go through this podcast episode without pointing out that Attune, you are known as the culture guardian. Now, you've got to let us know a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of proud of that. That honestly came back as a bit of feedback to me, like, you know, positive feedback. Like, I love that Syntron is basically the culture guardian of Attune. And that was honestly one of my, I felt really, really proud. I felt really, really good because that, I think it comes from the place of always being extra attentive to how the cultures, how the engineering culture specifically, but overall culture it's just happening at Attune. I think culture is like this, not elusive thing, but it's hard to, you know, everyone has a different culture and it's hard to, I guess, define culture into simple terms. But I think it's like the most important thing that engineering leaders, period, can do is build a healthy culture, right? Grow a healthy culture, scale a healthy culture. And so that title really comes from me trying to, I guess, fill those shoes. I don't do a great job. I mean, I do an okay job apparently right now. I mean, there's still a lot of room for improvement, but my passion is definitely there, right? For making sure that the type of engineering team and just culture we have at Attune is a healthy one, a compassionate one, one that focuses on communication, one that focuses honestly on people over everything. That's kind of like my catchphrase, people over everything. I think it's very important. And I think engineers and people in tech, I don't want to say that we lose sight of that, but you know, we're tech guys. We love writing code. We love making computers do stuff. And I think that sometimes we're more than other teams abstracted away from that people side. And I think it's important to bring it back to that people focus.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. And if you think about, you know, say the past year or so, when a lot of people, most people actually, especially in technology, are working from home.
Yeah.
And, you know, when individuals are separated like that and, you know, you're not in the physical office, you're not with those people physically, then culture becomes a very different thing then.
And
is that a lot harder to maintain when it's remote?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I think it is. I think there's definitely a new set of challenges that, you know, leaders have to think about. I think that, you know, naturally folks or companies, teams that had been remote since before COVID have maybe an easier time. For example, I've been remote since even before Attune, right? I've been remote full time. So I joined Attune being a full time, like I honestly think the first fully 100% remote engineer, maybe even employee, but I was like, if not the first employee, definitely the first engineer that was 100% remote. So the engineering team at Attune was maybe in a slightly better place to face all of these changes than other teams, but we still had challenges, right? But keeping that, again, that people focus, I think that's very, very important. Folks, my reports and just, you know, one-on-ones that I have with the team, you definitely feel the strain of not having people just nearby, right? And look, for someone that's been working remote for a while, you kind of get over it. You don't get over it, right? Like I said, I'm a people person. I love to talk. I'm constantly Slacking people just because I want to know what's up with their day because I miss that human connection. But I think that, you know, if you've been working remote for a while, you're kind of trained. I think it's harder for folks that are facing that for the first time. And I think that's really where you have to make sure that you have mechanisms in place, make sure that you have processes in place, make sure that you're very mindful of your team and how they're feeling. I think feelings are an incredibly important part in just any type of work, specifically as a leader, being very attuned, pun intended, right? Being very attuned to just how your team is feeling, how your team is operating. And that's like times 10, right? When it comes to remote work. And it's harder. It's definitely harder. You know, not just feelings, but like, for example, how do you do a team offsite? If everyone's remote, right? How do you do like team buildings, you know, if everyone's remote? How do you do, you know, we have we have like these huge meetings, not that we like huge meetings, but they're kind of like open forum for technology, for like, you know, trying to discuss what should be the next kind of technology we pick up, or cool experiments to try out. That's a pretty big meeting. How do you go around? How do you manage that, right? It's easier in person because you can anticipate when someone's going to speak. You know, someone might raise their hand. When you have your screen and there's like 20 small squares on it because you're in a hangout, right? It's hard to not interrupt people. It's hard to kind of keep the flow going if you want it to be an open forum. So there's definitely everything from like tactical to strategic challenges that I think engineering leaders really have to think on.
But so you're mentioning, you know, working from home and, you know, keeping in touch with those people. And I think a lot of that is to do with, if you're going to do it genuinely, it has to come from a place of empathy, right? Because you have to genuinely care about those people.
I love that word.
Yeah, because, you know, judging from experience with a job that I used to work at a job, I won't name names, but I had a manager who was very unempathetic. And you can see straight through it. It's very, very transparent and easy to spot. And you know that they're just making the effort because they have basically been told to, you know?
Yeah, part of the job, not because they genuinely care.
Exactly. Being an empathetic leader is incredibly important, isn't it? Especially in times like today.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think that, you know, I don't want to say society, but I think that empathy and compassion is something that all of us could do a little bit better job at collectively. Mm. And I try to bring that attitude to my management style. And I think that my team appreciates it.
Oh, but definitely.
You're right on the money. I think that you can not only see through it, but you're just not going to like where you're working if you don't have an empathetic boss. If you don't report to someone that understands just, you know, your background, what you're struggling with, both inside and outside of work, right? If you're not in a compassionate team and a team that just wants what's best for everyone, I think it's very hard for you to get involved, and it's very hard for you to stay in that job. And then as a leader and as a company, it's hard for you to retain talent, right? Especially in an industry like technology, where you're constantly upstaging perks and just trying to get the next perk out there, trying to really retain talent, right?
Yeah.
If you're not really caring about people, it's really hard to just grow not just the team, but grow a product, scale a product, deliver value.
Yeah.
Again, I come back to people over everything because I think that's a very important trait. And I think that people sometimes think like, just going to deliver a product, deliver value and call it a day. I think that you can't do that if you don't have the right people on your team. And you can't do that if you don't have the right attitude on your team. So, and like you said, more so today, right? With all this, all the COVID craziness,
yeah,
just to put a label on it, right? We're like, you know, I'm a parent, right? Luckily, I have, you know, my daughter's whatever, 13. So she's kind of self-independent. But what do you do with folks that have like 2-year-olds, right? Or 3-year-olds during the day, right? And that they can't get a babysitter, right? They used to be able to just nursery or school or whatever. They don't have that benefit anymore. So you have to be very mindful of that. I think if you're lacking empathy, it's going to be hard for you to relate to that, right? I think one thing about a team that I love is that everyone understands each other's backgrounds, and they're very respectful and just, you know, nice. So they understand if you need to, you know, if you need to change your schedule, or if you need to take some time off because something just suddenly happened. I think everyone understands, like everyone at a team knows that everyone's trying to do a good job.
Yeah.
And if you ask for something, it's because you really need it, and we're going to do the best we can to accommodate it. And I think that's what engineering leaders should be doing. All leaders should be doing nowadays, honestly.
Yeah, there's a few points that I want to pick you up on there. It's so interesting. And, you know, I was thinking, why, you were mentioning empathetic people and more, everyone could be a bit more empathetic. But I think in, you know, this day and age, there's something, you know, everyone's out for themselves. You know, there's a thing recently, it's called hustle culture, and it's kind of seems like every man out for themselves. And it's like, that is the wrong message to be sending out into the world. Do the opposite of that.
I wholeheartedly agree. I love the proverb. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's so key because look, our CTO, Azim Ansar, he's like the best boss I've ever had, right? And I've been so lucky in my career to have just amazing leaders, amazing, not only CEOs, but just like direct managers, very talented people, very compassionate people. I've been very lucky. And our current CTO is like at the top of the list. So that's like, I'm actually scared that, you know, whichever role I take on next, I'm just, you know, but my luck is going to run dry. But I think that from the top down attitude, we have genuine interest in people. Mm. And I think that is so key. I feel so appreciated. I feel that my manager is invested in me, right? Not just because of what I can do for Attune, but what I can do for the industry, what I can do honestly for other people, because I think ultimately that's what we're trying to accomplish, right? Mm. So I think that I do agree that there's this kind of like hustle culture going on. I do think that there's this thing like it's me versus the world, me versus you, and me trying to get ahead. I think that I'm trying to dispel that. I'm trying to work against that bit by bit as much as I can within Attune, but I'm really happy at the team that we've built, at the leadership that we've built, because it is completely anti that, right? It is completely genuinely caring about the team, about each individual, and wanting them to get better, right? I mean, it's very important, and I think we do a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, it certainly seems like it. And you know, I've experienced bad culture before and bad management, like I mentioned earlier. This company that I keep bringing up is so unlucky because I bring them up all the time to use them as a bad example on a podcast. They must, if they knew it was about them.
but that's the lasting impression you leave, right? If you're not good at culture, like I don't think people take culture for granted. I think everyone's like, oh, you have to build culture, you have to build a team, you have to scale the team, you have to make sure that it's a healthy culture. But I don't think that people, you know, I don't want to sound cynical or anything, but I think people are just doing it for the so they can say they did it, right? So they can say, I'm big on culture. I think people miss the point underneath it, which is, look, it's not just about making people feel comfortable. It's also your reputation, both as a product and as an employer, as a team, as a leader, right? So it's not just about saying we have good culture, checkbox, right? It's about literally living and breathing that every single day. And if you don't, guess what? You're going to come up in a podcast about not being a really, and that's like the worst rep you could get, quite honestly. Yeah. It's not, you don't want that.
No.
So not only do you have to be an inspiring leader, you have to, you know, again, deliver value, but you also have to build and grow a healthy, nurturing culture. And I think that you also have to do that with like all of the leadership chain, and not just everyone, right? But especially the leadership chain of managers beneath you. You have to make sure that they're finally attuned to good leadership. Good culture.
Yeah. And, you know, earlier on in the podcast, you were saying that people are the most important thing, right?
Yeah.
So is that down to, you know, so if you think about, you know, you're trying to build a culture within a team or within a business and you think, right, I'm going to hire people that are going to be right for this culture, hire nice people, you know, that work hard and, you know, can grow together. But then once you've got those people, what's the next step? I mean, obviously you've got there's actual physical things that you can do, like team days out and things like that. Yeah. But I think it's more than that though. And it's something you can't, it's really difficult to, because it's untangible. You can't feel it, you know. There must be a certain aspects of that you're not in control of. Surely the culture within your team in the business together just happens almost naturally. So there's a lot of that that's kind of out of your control. You can do certain things to kind of nurture that.
Yeah, and I think that's really the crux of the issue, right? Is you get to a point, especially as you're growing, where you get to kind of like a tipping point where it's going to be really hard to control the finer points of culture. It's going to be really hard, honestly, to be in every conversation, to be in every meeting, right? To be in, I mean, you know, not everyone's in every one-on-one, but to know what's up in every one-on-one. So I think that's why, to answer your question, like what's next, right? After you build those people, what's next? Well, you trust them, right? You trust them. That's why you hire them. That's why you establish values. That's why you establish a healthy culture. And I know I keep saying culture and it's intangible, but you know, off the top of my head, that's why you establish processes. That's why you establish building relationships is something key to just everyone in the team. That's why you don't tolerate anything that isn't nice, just to put it quite simple. And with these values in place, the people that you hire, you let them go and you let them do your thing, and you trust that you've built a good culture. And it's not an easy thing, right? Because you also have to be constantly on the lookout. You have to be constantly just fine tuning all of this. But I think that the only way that you can grow in a healthy manner is if from the beginning you're focusing on culture, if from the beginning you're focusing on hiring people that are in line, right, and aligned with your vision of culture, so that they can then keep driving that culture, right? It's almost like you just kind of, you know, build it and they will come type of scenario, where you have to build the base, you attract people, and then you trust that those people keep pushing that culture forward. And it's not perfect, and you're going to mess up, and you're going to have to quickly iterate on it and quickly fix it. But I think that's how you start. It's building building just the place where people want to come work, where they feel comfortable, and then letting those people drive that culture forward. I think that's my style of management, honestly. And I think it's worked pretty well. I think Katuna's at the point where we're just growing so quickly, both in just hiring and what we're trying to build. And that's kind of how I feel now. It's not that I feel like it's gone away from me. I feel like I now just have to let the team do what the team has to do. And my job now, it's the same job as I always had, but it's more of just paying attention. It's always been paying attention, but now more paying attention than necessarily taking the reins of driving culture, right?
Right.
It's okay. More reactive than proactive, because I think, you know, the proactive part, we've already put a lot of investment into it. And now we just kind of want to let people, you know, express themselves and develop themselves in a tune. And it's going well. I'm happy about that.
Well, it sounds amazing. When you're finding those right people to join your business, what are some of the things that you have to look out for? I mean, what are the pitfalls to be aware of when you're hiring new people into the business? I mean, surely that's got a lot of variables too, and that can go wrong as well. So,
Totally. To be clear, right, I think we've done a pretty good job at Attune. I'm also not just singing my praises. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of back and forth. It's a lot of learning, honestly, right? And you're constantly, like I said, just trying to optimize for that. But it's a lot of work, honestly. I mean, it's a lot of work. And specifically on a lot of work is hiring. Like you said, there's just so many things you have to be on the lookout. What I personally believe is communication and compassion.
Right.
Like I call them like my three C's, honestly. I think the first two C's are more important: communication and compassion. Or if I were to order them, compassion, communication, commitment. Right. I think that that's just so key. And I think that compassion is kind of like the first thing that I look for, especially when I'm trying to gauge how leaders are. Like, you know, I often ask, what are some important qualities a leader has to have? And they always, but whenever someone says compassion or empathy, I just, you know, I feel great, because I think that's like very important. So I think, and again, not just in leaders, in engineers also, to be quite honest, I prefer a decent, good engineer that is compassionate and can communicate than like a rock star engineer. I mean, I already hate that term, but yeah, you know, just to borrow a term from the industry, like a rock star engineer or a 10X engineer. I don't care about 10X engineers, quite frankly. I care about engineers that are compassionate and can be part of a team. Because again, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I think that if you're building a business, if you're trying to deliver value, you have to do the latter. You have to focus on building a team, and you can't build a cohesive team. You can't really have a cohesive unit unless you have members that are compassionate and that can communicate and that commit. And commit doesn't mean that they'll agree with everything you say. I think commit just means that they're in it. They're in the vision, right? They believe in the vision. They believe in the vision, in the mission. They might disagree, but they want to be part of what's coming, right? They want to be part of what you're building, and they want to be part of the team that's building that, right? I think community, building a team, is so important, especially in these COVID times, because you don't really have a lot of human interaction nowadays. So then who do you interact with the most? Your coworkers. So you really want to build that community. And if just one person that kind of doesn't gel with that, it's just a discordant note in the whole symphony, so to speak. And it's bad. So hiring is definitely something. It's really, where it starts.
Yeah. And there is that kind of balancing act between, technical expertise and, personability, kind of cultural fit. I mean, would you say that there was a percentage there that you kind of go off? Is there a percentage split, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's always hard to put these things into numbers, right? Because honestly, you also just kind of get a, I like to be an analytical guy, but I'm still human. I get a gut feeling about people,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
You kind of feel it. But I would say, look, it is easier to teach someone how to code or how to do a specific process than it is to teach them how to communicate, right? Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't build on communication and we shouldn't teach about that and we shouldn't help people grow in communication at all, right? I'm just saying that when it comes to kind of hiring like that, I'm just very mindful of that, right? I'm mindful of like, look, because it's also about intent. It's also about what you want to do. If you're honest about, look, I'm very good technical, I'm not that great at communication, but I want to get better. That's NA in my book, right? Because you just want to grow on that. And that's just a skill, like any other skill. Like I don't like it when people call these soft skills, right? Because they're not soft skills. They're like critical skills.
Yeah.
Right. They're like so critical to just having a working, functioning business. So not that soft implies that it's wrong, but it does have to say like, oh, it's just like a soft skill. It's like the real hard thing is going to be like doing the coding challenge, when you're in an interview, but not really. You have to have those skills of communication. So if someone wants to grow in communication, that's great because they're aware of it, right? They know that they need to grow in that capacity and that's fine. But people that aren't aware of kind of like, for better or worse, with flaws or where they need to grow, right? I think that's when I really start to value communication over technical chops. Now, look, obviously, like you said, there's bounds. Like, as much as I would like to hire folks that I've met that are like great, just people, I can't because they can't code, right? So that's also the nature. Like you also have to be able to deliver the work, right? You have to be able to code. You have to be able to, do agile, be part of a team. Yeah, but part of a team is like the thing we're over-optimizing for, over-indexing for, but you still have to be able to, you still have to have the technical chops. Mm. So that's definitely true. But when it comes to, I guess, if I have to put a percentage, I would say like, I don't even want to give a percentage, but I definitely over-index more on communication or the awareness of how well you are at communicating and compassionate you are. That's definitely a little bit more important. I weigh that a little bit heavier than other things, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. I mean, so say for example, when you're interviewing someone and you seem to be the kind of guy that's really good at kind of reading people and, you mentioned you have gut feelings. And then as you scale a business and other people are doing the hiring for you, how do you then give them the reins to take charge of those interviews and those hires to be like, because that's a skill in itself, interviewing people and hiring people, totally. It's a skill in itself. So how do you teach that though?
Yeah, that's definitely a challenge, right? Yeah. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying, like you get to a point where you can't be in every meeting, right? Yep. You can't be in you can't be in every interview. So how do you make sure that what you're doing makes sense? And I think there's a couple of things. I think one, definitely, like I said, you go in, you build the foundation of a good culture and then you trust people.
Yeah.
But I mean, I also want to give like the tangible part of it, which is you have to trust people, but you have to give them a framework to work in. Right. So I think what we try to do is we constantly have a kind of interview training to identify biases, to just make sure that we're on the up and up when it comes to interviewing, right? We have this standardized interview approach, as most companies do, right? But we're constantly iterating, like, maybe at least once a week, once every 2 weeks, we kind of huddle quickly, nothing formal, just through Slack. Hey, how's this part of the interview going? Did it make sense? We're constantly kind of like looking at our data, so to speak, like, look, all of these candidates that came in, all of them did really bad on this part of the interview. Do we need to change that? Is that reflective of where the industry is at? Do we need to update it? Is it too hard? Are we not being mindful enough? Are we not, picking up on cues that people might be like, oh, I need a little bit more clarification on this. So there's definitely that part of having a system in place, a framework of constant feedback, right? Of constant just analyzing your data points to make sure that you're on track and that your framework is actually working, right? So culture is great, but if you don't have a framework where people can work into like interview for everything, but just choosing this interview example, it's going to be hard. So I think having a framework, writing stuff down, having everyone on the same page and aligned on what we're hiring for, what type of people do we want to get, right? How do you make sure that you're not biased in the type of people that you want to get, right? Because that can come up too. So it's not just about, I want people that are communicative, like, but I also want to make sure that I'm not biasing towards one type of person or another, right? Like this almost always manifests itself in like, you know, introverts and extroverts, right? Yeah, extroverts tend to be overly communicative, but I mean, introverts can be very, like they're good at communication too. They might not just want to talk like me. I talk all the time about anything, the weather, tomatoes, you name it. I can talk all day on topics, but you also have to be very mindful of like, okay, how do you accommodate the skill, right? How do you isolate the skill that you're trying to get for the type of people that you're interviewing? Because I think that's important too. So all of these things, we're just constantly trying. We're constantly, again, and we kind of go through the process also of like, you know, what do you call it? Dog feeding your own process to make sure that it makes sense. And it's all about the framework, man. I think that once you build the culture, you really have to have that framework in place so that people can work and they know like, okay, these are the bounds that we've defined to interview. This is where we have to operate in. If I'm doing this, I'm doing a good job of interviewing. And that's not always the case, right? You constantly have to, like I said, go back and forth, but it's helped us a lot so far.
Yeah, definitely. And I think let's tie this up, but with one nice final point, right? What advice would you give to someone after what we've spoken about? A little piece of advice to start building a culture to keep it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
keep it that open. That's not easy to answer.
it isn't. I guess I would say people over everything.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be kind of like that's how I like to sum it up. I think that, and look, that doesn't just mean right from an internal perspective, although it definitely does. Like I said, basically our entire talk has been about how culture and hiring the right people, building the right kind of just safe place for your employees is critical, but also when you're selling, also when you're trying to build a product, also when you're trying to build value, people first. I think that, you know, as hackers, as builders, as entrepreneurs, we want to envision the perfect product. I know what the perfect product is going to be. I'm going to go out there, I'm going to build it, end of story. And some people can get away with that. But I think really what it comes down to is what do your people need? And when I say your people, not just internally, but like what do your clients need, right? They're people. Go people first. What do they need? What value do you need to be adding for them? So I think people over everything. People should always trump anything and everything. Is my bit of advice that I think that makes sense.
Oh, superb. We couldn't have wrapped that up better. That's perfect. I mean, honestly, Jackie, we could genuinely sit here all day and talk about this. We've literally just scraped the surface. I mean, you mentioned bias there before when interviewing, and I thought, oh my God, we could really talk for another 2 hours on that one.
Oh yeah, that's a whole topic in itself. And it's so critical and so important, but I agree. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. But for today, thank you so much. I'm going to call you Citron for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Ben, for inviting me. It's been an absolute pleasure. I love talking about these topics, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to just kind of like, you know, speak my piece and share my thoughts. I very much appreciate it. Thank you, and thanks to Venturi.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.